We're talking about partisan gerrymandering on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Throughout our nation's history, regardless of what party is in charge, politicians have intentionally manipulated the boundaries of electoral districts in order to rein in their political opponents' power and in order to keep themselves in office. The Supreme Court has recognized that partisan gerrymandering is a problem, but a fix is still out of reach. And we're going to look at possible solutions in light of Missouri last month adopting a new first-of-its-kind redistricting law. What does a fair model for redistricting look like to you? How would you like to see voting lines drawn? And who should be in charge of drawing and redrawing districts? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Justin Buechler is an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. His recent piece for the website The Conversation is called "Stopping Partisan Gerrymandering is More Complicated Than You Think." Justin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Glad to join you.
Well, Wisconsinites, many Wisconsinites followed the Supreme Court case Gill versus Whitford very closely. Then it was sent back to a lower court on a technicality. But first, take us big picture here. Is partisan gerrymandering an issue that many states are having to work through, grapple with?
Well, it is an issue, but it's a complicated issue for a variety of reasons. So there are a couple of considerations for any given state. One is, how big of an issue is it? And that's sort of a measurement question. So from a measurement perspective, this is one of the things that makes Gill v. Whitford important. And from the court's perspective, what they have said is they consider partisan gerrymandering in principle justiciable, which is the court's terminology for something that they think they could rule on in principle, but they have said that there has never been a standard presented to them that they are willing to consider. And in Gill v. Whitford, they were presented with a measurement that was written specifically to the court. And this has been an issue historically with partisan gerrymandering. How do we measure it? The other issue is, just how bad does it get? And this is where partisan gerrymandering gets really tricky, because the way that you do a partisan gerrymander is that the party that is attempting to get an advantage. So if I am trying to carve up a state in a way that gives my party an advantage over yours, I try to give myself very narrow majorities in a lot of districts, and then I try to pack your party inefficiently into a small number of districts. And where that gets really risky is if there is a shift in public opinion. All it takes is a small shift in all of those narrow majority districts that I gave myself, I lose. And where this actually became a real issue was for the Republican Party in the state of New York in 1974, as they had attempted a partisan gerrymander. And then you got to the 1974 election, public opinion shifted against the Republicans because of Watergate, and a bunch of those narrow Republican majority districts, they lost. So there's a term for this that was coined by Tom Brunell and Bernie Grossman, which is a dummy mander, which is when you attempt to give yourself narrow majorities in a lot of districts, and then public opinion shifts, and you wind up losing all of those districts. So there's sort of a limit, sort of a natural limit in how far you can go. You want to give yourself a bunch of extra districts, but if you try to go too far, then a little bit of a shift in public opinion and you lose those districts. So you can give yourself a little bit of an advantage, but not too much. And then how we measure that is another level of complication.
And you talk about this notion of pack, which we've been talking about, but pack and crack. Where does the crack come in?
So the crack is the districts where I've given myself a narrow majority, I've given you a big minority, right? So if I give myself a 55% majority in order to give myself a narrow majority, and I spread that across a bunch of districts, then I've given you a 45% minority in a lot of districts. And those 45% minorities, they could have been combined to give you majorities in another set of districts. So that's the cracking part.
We're looking at the trade-offs associated with drawing legislative districts maps, this pursuit of finding fairness and balance, talking with Justin Buechler. He is an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. How do we go about minimizing partisan bias? Can this be achieved when we draw party maps, party lines? What questions do you have about partisan gerrymandering? Join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Justin, let's talk for a moment about Missouri, which you recently wrote about. The state passed a first-of-its-kind redistricting law at the end of last year. What does that policy look like?
So Missouri created an interesting requirement, and their requirement is that plans have to meet two conditions. They're requiring that districts be competitive so that you have a set of districts that are close enough to 50-50 that you have marginal elections, but they also want to meet a standard of partisan balance. And this is sort of a mathematical problem, as I argue. So if what you actually want to achieve is partisan parity, where the partisan balance of who gets elected matches the state, the best way to achieve that is actually to get rid of competitive districts. And this is the problem, I argue, with what Missouri did. So if you look empirically at states and how they draw district lines, the states that have a partisan balance in their elected officials that match the state are the ones that don't have competitive districts. Mm. This is something that a lot of people don't understand because it's kind of mathematically weird. But the best way to achieve a balance of elected officials that match the state is to have a bunch of Democratic districts that are really heavily Democratic, a bunch of Republican districts that are really heavily Republican, and just pack all of the voters with the same level of inefficiency, to use the terms in Gildy Whitford.
It sounds
and
almost
not have competitive districts.
It sounds almost counterintuitive.
Yes, it is.
But when does the power of incumbency factor in? How does being an incumbent, and how do you measure factors like that?
Well, we can measure the power of incumbency, and that's actually part of the problem with competitive districts. So if you draw a competitive district, a 50-50 district, thinking that you're going to create competitive elections, the problem is, as soon as an incumbent wins that district, you're no longer going to have competitive elections. So if you draw a district that is 50% Democratic, 50% Republican, thinking, well, I now have competitive elections, as soon as somebody wins that district, you have an incumbent. And one of the things that we know from research on congressional elections is that incumbents tend to win re-election overwhelmingly. So you think you've created competitive elections when you haven't. Because incumbents win overwhelmingly.
We're talking with Case Western Reserve University political scientist Justin Buechler about redistricting, about electoral maps. Are some election maps so skewed by politics that they violate the Constitution? How do we fix partisan gerrymandering, something that our nation has struggled with since basically the start? Join in at 800-642-1234. Have you found yourself moved from one district to another in the past? Did it matter to you? Was there an impact? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be right back to talk about this on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court agreed to take another look at whether partisan gerrymandering violates the Constitution. This followed two decisions last summer in which the High Court sidestepped the question in cases from Wisconsin and Maryland. The justices will hear arguments in March and are expected to rule by the end of June. We're looking at what's a fair model for redistricting as states straight across the country try to rein in partisan gerrymandering. Your questions and insights are welcome at 800-642-1234. What does a fair model for redistricting look like to you? How would you like to see voting lines drawn? And do you feel like your vote matters? You can call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Justin Buechler is our guide. He's an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. He's been writing about how we draw lines on a map on the website, The Conversation. Justin, you also point out that partisanship can affect election results. Where do you see some stark examples of that going on?
Everywhere. I mean, partisanship is the primary determinant of how people vote. And this is where we see district lines for the most part. The problem with figuring out how to draw anything that could be considered fair district lines is that there are other things that affect district lines, and that's where incumbency comes in. So we can sort of look at a partisan distribution and try to figure out how to group Democrats and Republicans in what seems like a fair way. And the problem from a measurement perspective is we look at election results and they are also affected by incumbency. So if I just want to see where are the Democrats and where are the Republicans, I can't just look at election results, because if there is an incumbent who is facing a challenger with no experience, the election result is not simply affected by incumbency. It is also affected by the dynamic between the incumbent and the challenger. So I can't simply say, well, this location here has 80% Democrats and 20% Republicans because the Republican was not really a strong challenger, and I can't use that election result as a measure. So partisanship is really everywhere in election results. The problem is trying to sort out what is a real measure of partisanship from what has been sort of polluted by contest-specific factors, because what we want from a redistricting plan is something that is representative of the partisan preferences of the electorate.
When we've had conversations like this in the past, we've had people call in and say, Justin, why can't computers draw these lines for us? Computers don't lean Republican or Democrat. Why can't technology do this?
Well, technology is actually doing a lot of it. And what people are doing with the computers right now is figuring out how to give one party a very narrow advantage. And one of the reasons that you see really crazy shaped districts is somebody is plugging the census figures into a computer and saying, I want a redistricting plan that does X, and the computer does that. So the better the computers get, the crazier the district lines get. Now, you can ask a computer to draw district lines, but it will only draw them based on an algorithm that you give them. So the question is, what algorithm do you give the computers? And right now, we can tell a computer, I want a partisan balance, or I want to respect communities of interest. I want to keep cities together. I want to respect local boundaries. I want to respect natural physical boundaries. And the more of these criteria you give the computer, the more difficult it gets, because you then have to tell the computer what the balance between these criteria should be. And that gets more complicated. So it is something that you could in principle tell a computer to do, but the issue is, what balance do you give the computer? And that's a judgment call.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Joe joining us from Waukesha. Good morning, Joe. I hope you're not too cold.
No, not so. I'm fine. Thank you for asking. But the reason I called is I think the purpose, and it is a purpose, behind gerrymandering is to suppress voter participation in democracy in America. And it's working very well. Independent voters now are people who don't belong or support either of the two political parties, which are almost equally corrupt, especially the Republican Party. Both parties, of course, are sunk in, you know, excessive amounts of money. But it basically, we are threatening the future of democracy in this country. And if it continues, I think we're heading in the direction of some sort of fascist state.
Joe, thanks for the call. And he's really getting at there what happens when your vote doesn't matter.
Well, first of all, the purpose of gerrymandering is not to suppress the vote. The purpose of a partisan gerrymander is to give one party an advantage, which is different from the purpose of what we call a bipartisan gerrymander, which is to sort of lock in one set of seats for the Democrats and another seat for the Republicans. The issue of independent voters, this is one of the common myths that comes from badly designed survey questions. If you ask people if they are Democrats, Republicans, or independents without a follow-up question, you'll get roughly one-third, one-third, one-third. If you then ask the self-identified independents a follow-up question, if they lean towards one party or another, most of the self-identified independents will admit to a leaning, and the people who admit to a partisan leaning will then admit that they vote consistently with the party of their leaning. True independents constitute 10 to 15% of the electorate. So most of the country really is partisan. This isn't about voter suppression really at all. As for voter turnout, voter turnout is really much more influenced by presidential elections than by congressional elections.
So what do you see as a better way here, Justin? What can states do to get a new model off the ground that is fair and reflective of the people who go to the voting booth to cast their vote?
So mathematically, I think that what is most representative of the electorate's preferences is what's called a bipartisan gerrymander, which is when you draw districts such that you pack the Democrats very heavily into one set of Democratic districts, pack the Republicans very heavily into another set of Republican districts, and don't have competitive districts, because that is the kind of redistricting plan in which the end result, the elected officials, you get a balance that most closely reflects the underlying balance of the state,
which is
the primary consideration.
Do we see those plans in place in any states?
Not particularly, but Ohio, where I am, just adopted a proposal in the last round of elections in 2018, which has a process that moves in that direction. So the interesting ballot proposition passed last year here required a bipartisan supermajority to pass a redistricting plan. And that means that you need the consent of both the Democrats and the Republicans, which creates partisan pressure to pass a bipartisan gerrymander. So it is not a requirement to pass a bipartisan gerrymander, but when you have a requirement that both parties consent to the plan, that doesn't mean you get competitive districts. That creates political pressure for a bipartisan gerrymander. So that is at least a process requirement for it. It also said that if you don't have bipartisan consent, the plan will only exist for 4 years, meaning if there is a partisan gerrymander, it will not last for the full 10-year cycle of a census. So this was one of those very rare redistricting reforms that I actually kind of liked, because it created pressure for a bipartisan gerrymander rather than a partisan gerrymander.
In the last 20 seconds or so we have with you, where is the Supreme Court in all of this, and what are you watching as 2019 unfolds?
I am watching how they handle Gil v. Whitford, because the standard presented to them on measuring partisan gerrymandering in Gil v. Whitford is going to be indicative of whether or not they will, for the first time, strike down a redistricting plan on the grounds that it is a partisan gerrymander. They've been saying they might for many years. They haven't done it yet. Gilvie Whitford is the most likely case for them to do so.
Justin, thank you for joining us.
Glad to do so.
Justin Buechler is an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. His piece for the website The Conversation is called Stopping Partisan Gerrymandering is More Complicated Than You Think. His most recent book is called Incremental Polarization. Coming up next, the Midwest is expected to experience the lowest temperatures in a generation this week. They're here. Meteorologist joins us to break down the causes these extreme weather events have and what we need to know to stay safe. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.